to present on actually beauty, art, and spiritual practice. And when John asked me if I'd talk about beauty, art, and spiritual practice, I thought, sure, I'm an artist and I teach art, so I can easily talk about art. And since I'm an artist, I must know about beauty. And then I can draw from my own spiritual practice and talk about that. Put those together, I thought, easy.
No.
Not a problem. And then when I started to think about it more and did a little research, I realized that those are three really big topics. Art. We've been making art for at least 40,000 years. We found evidence of art making in cave paintings and amulets that are at least 40,000 years old. And our cultures have been talking, our early Western culture has been talking about art for 2,000 years. So the early philosophers, Plato, where are they? Socrates, Aristotle, they talked about art and how we value art. So they kind of introduced the area of aesthetics over 2,000 years ago. So that's a big topic. And of course, a lot of us feel, well, I don't know much about art, but I know what I like. And that's one approach to art. Not knowing too much about it, but knowing what you like when you see it. Then beauty is more of a challenge for me, because as a contemporary artist, I don't think we really hold beauty in the highest value in terms of art making. So beauty is a characteristic of a person, place, animal, object that provides a perceptual experience of pleasure, meaning, or satisfaction. I kind of like that definition of beauty. It also, the experience of beauty often involves the interpretation of something that's in balance and harmony with nature. So right away, nature comes into it. When I thought about these three words, art, beauty, and spirituality or spiritual practice, I thought, well, how can we leave nature out of that? So that perception of balance or harmony with nature can lead to feelings of attraction and emotional well-being. And because this is a subjective experience, it's often said that beauty is in the eyes of the beholder. Just like, I don't know much about art, but I know what I like. In its most profound sense, beauty can create an experience of positive reflection about the meaning of one's own existence. A subject of beauty is something that resonates with personal meaning. So nature is a benchmark for beauty. Now, in my view, nature is always beautiful. Some natural settings are more postcard beautiful than others, but every little corner of nature has beauty if you take the time to examine it and look at it closely. Even natural disasters and violent events that happen in nature have their elements of beauty, even though they can be devastating for us. So one approach to creating beauty in art is to mimic nature. But it's not the only approach to making art. And in fact, in the 21st century, because photography does such a great job at mimicking nature, then artists often choose to make art in another way. The coin Greek word for beautiful was horaios, which is an adjective coming from the word hora, meaning hour. In Koine Greek, beauty was thus associated with being of one's hour. So a ripe fruit of its time is therefore beautiful. The earliest Western theory of beauty can be found in the works of early Greek philosophers. The Pythagorean school saw a strong connection between mathematics and beauty. They noted that objects proportioned according to the golden ratio seemed attractive. Now, the golden ratio, if I can explain it the way I understand it, is if you took a rectangle and you divided it not in half, but partway, then the ratio between that piece and the leftover piece would be the same as the ratio of the leftover piece to the whole. So, and then there's a mathematical number, but I can't tell you what that mathematical number is. But a lot of Greek architecture and classical architecture was based on that view of those proportions of the golden mean and symmetry. Plato considered beauty to be the idea above all ideas, or the form above all forms. Aristotle saw a relationship between the beautiful and virtue. He argued that virtue aims at the beautiful. And I know you all like St. Augustine's quote here. Beauty is indeed a good gift of God, but that the good may not think it a great good, God dispenses it even to the wicked. So during the Renaissance, those classical ideals of beauty were also adopted, rational order and harmony of proportions. The Romantic poets explored the nature of beauty, with John Keats arguing in Ode to a Grecian Urn, you know, close to my heart since I'm a ceramic artist, "Beauty is truth, truth beauty, that is all ye need, ye know on earth, and all ye need to know." The 20th century, though, saw an increasing rejection of beauty by artists and philosophers alike, culminating in postmodernism's anti-aesthetics. Most contemporary art is not based on beauty. Beauty is not the primary value by which artists judge contemporary art. Any of you who have visited the Walker Art Center in Minneapolis, you know, have seen that not all contemporary art is beautiful. Contemporary artists are interested in engaging in a visual dialogue of art among artists. So study of art of the past is essential, and all artists are keenly aware of historical as well as contemporary art. Some artists may consciously address beauty in their work, and they may learn about the history of aesthetics because that's part of the subject matter that they're addressing in their work. But a study of aesthetics and beauty is not necessarily part of a contemporary artist's training. A contemporary philosopher, though, Guy Cercello, has recently written about beauty in two of his books, A New Theory of Beauty and Love and Beauty. So I haven't read either of those, but he is trying to bring beauty back into contemporary art. Now, spirituality, as you all know, is an inner path enabling a person to discover the essence of their being or the deepest values and meanings by which people live. Spiritual practices, including meditation, prayer, contemplation, develop one's inner life. Spiritual experience includes that of connectedness to a larger reality, yielding a more comprehensive self, connectedness with other individuals or the human community, with nature or the cosmos. So nature, again, has been associated with spirituality, or with the divine realm. Spirituality is almost often experienced as a source of inspiration or orientation in life. It can encompass a belief in the immaterial realities or experiences of the immanent or transcendent nature of the world. A modern definition that I like from Robert C. Fuller in his book, Spiritual But Not Religious, is: spirituality exists wherever we struggle with the issues of how our lives fit into the greater scheme of things. This is true when our questions never give way to specific answers, or give rise to specific practices, such as prayer or meditation. We encounter spiritual issues every time we wonder where the universe comes from, why we are here, or what happens when we die. We also become spiritual when we become moved by values such as beauty, love, or creativity that seem to reveal a meaning or power beyond our visible world. An idea or practice is spiritual when it reveals our personal desire to establish a felt relationship with the deepest meanings or powers governing life. Now, art has been linked closely with spirituality. Here's an example from India. Indian art evolved with an emphasis on inducing special spiritual or philosophical states in the audience, or with representing them symbolically. According to Kapila Vatsayan, who's a leading scholar, classical Indian architecture, sculpture, painting, literature, music, and dancing share with one another not only the underlying spiritual beliefs of the Indian religio-philosophic mind, but also the procedures by which the relationships of the symbol and the spiritual states were worked out in detail. And Plato says about poetry, "For the authors of those great poems which we admire do not attain to excellence through the rules of any art, not through aesthetic rules, but they utter their beautiful melodies in a state of inspiration, as it were, possessed by a spirit not their own." So here Plato is asserting that the artist enters a spiritual state to create the greatest works of art. And that's what I'd like to do this morning with all of you. Whenever I engage in art making, I strive to make it a spiritual activity. The art of creativity is all-consuming, and really it feels like heaven to me. Art and beauty are experienced through the eyes and the ears. My perception is that heaven, or the realm of the spirit, is here and now. We need only to awaken to it. There are many ways to do this: prayer, meditation, singing, for instance, which we just did. Another way is through appreciating the beauty of nature and also appreciating the beauty of art. One function of art is to remind us of the beauty of the world. And finally, we can enter that realm of the spiritual through art making. So I'm going to invite you to do that this morning with me. Now, I know most of you don't consider yourself artists. However, I would bet that inside, a lot of you feel that you could be an artist. Or if you decided to commit yourself to that. Or that you are an artist inside and you hope to develop your inner artist in the future, maybe, when you have more time and don't have other responsibilities as you have now in your life. So first of all, I invite you to embrace your inner artist. And then there's the act of creation. Artists enter a spiritual state when they're creating art, and that's a key element in the resulting beauty. Now, one could argue that another key element is mastery of the craft, of the medium that you're working in. And so we're going to limit our expectation of beauty. We're not all masterful sculptors, right, who work in clay. And so to a critical outside world of viewers, our creations might not look beautiful. But we don't care about that. What you make is beautiful to you if you approach the art of creation with sincerity, and that's all that we need. So I'm asking you to not worry about what other people might think about what you're going to make. It's for you. Now, you have a ball of clay in plastic and a simple wooden tool and a work board. And here's, we've got some extras too.
everyone have one? Does anybody need one?
Does anyone need one? Some extras here if anybody needs a board. And I'll tell you here. I'll give you an overview of what we're going to do. I'm going to suggest some images to you, a place, an image for you to make. So first I'm going to suggest the image that I'd like you to make. I'm going to show you a few simple techniques of working with clay in case you haven't done it recently. And then I'm going to ask you to work in silence and make your piece. And enter that spiritual realm as you're working, not worrying about what your piece looks like, doing it for you, for yourself. So, and then of course in the meantime, you can just knead that clay if you want, you can put the plastic on and let it off, you can just play with it. If you don't want to make something, that's fine too. So, the possible images. Choose one that resonates for you. When I say something, if an image pops in your mind, go with that. Just take it. My suggestions, a portrait of your spirit. What would your spirit look like? How do you imagine it? What might represent your spirit? Or an environment that could be heaven for you. What would that look like? How about a self-portrait? Portrait of yourself as an enlightened being, perfect, the perfect you. Self-portrait of your perfect animal spirit, self. Who is your animal perfect spirit self, and what would the perfect one look like? A self-portrait of you as an enlightened tree or plant, other kind of plant. A self-portrait of you as an enlightened garden. Maybe a portrait of your perfect child or baby self. A portrait of your perfect elderly sage self. Maybe create Eve or Adam, enlightened people in paradise. Before that fall. So this can be representational or abstract, with simple forms representing complex forms or ideas. Now to go over a few ways to work. One way you can work is simply sculpting from the whole, forming with your fingers out of the hole, maybe pushing with the popsicle stick tool, taking things away if you need to. Another way, if you want to create a slab, is to take a piece off and press it between your palms. You want to get a, maybe you're going to make an environment and you want a big slab, a big base or something, or you want to make that slab into a cylinder or a cone or some other shape. You can press together with a slab. If you're going to make a person or an animal shape, you might make a few coils, row coils in your hand. And then you can blend those coils together. So I've got a long coil for the body, and it becomes a head, another coil for the legs. Pinch out a little tail. Maybe you're doing your enlightened animal self. Pinch out some wings. You can use the tool to draw, make details. You could come up and get more clay if you don't have enough. Got plenty of clay up here. use your board. So let's enter a period of silent creation. Becoming involved in that creative act, engaged in that. Enter a state of spirituality. We'll do this for about 10 minutes, and I'll let you know when we're done. Then we'll finish and we'll continue with the rest of the service. Thank you. spirituality I'm seeing all around the room. And so, as we wrap up this part of the service and go back to the rest of it, when we're done, I invite you to put your creations up front on the table. There's a couple of table spaces up there. Maybe you can share something about them with each other during coffee hour. We also have some water and towels for your hands that might be feeling a little bit dry. And then if you want to take your creation home, we have some cardboard. You can take it home on a piece of cardboard. If you just want to recycle this way, you can do that too and put it back in the bag up there at coffee hour. And right now you can probably have room to contemplate while we finish up. Yeah, we can just wait for our pianist to go into our next number, and then we'll take everything up to the table at the end, which is another 5 minutes or so.
Right. We'll sing a song, and we'll do a reading and meditation, and then we'll bring things up when we get done. Stay right where you are, except for me.